Support for Living on Earth comes from listeners like you. To make a donation, please use the link to the left of this webpage. And thanks.
In the muck at the bottom of Washington's Puget Sound, there is money to be made. Big, ugly clams called gooey ducks are bought and sold on an international and sometimes illegal market that fetches millions. Reporter Craig Welch dove into the gooey duck fishery and found a window into the world of wildlife smugglers and the dedicated detectives trying to track them down. The result was his book, Shell Games, Rogues, Smugglers, and the Hunt for Nature's Bounty. The tale of poached clams and hard-boiled detectives reads like a mix of Sam Spade and Wild Kingdom. Craig Welch, welcome to Living on Earth.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with the gooey duck. Tell me about this odd animal.
The gooey duck is a fist-sized clam that's found in great numbers only in Puget Sound and just off the coast of Vancouver. And this clam looks like something that, if you've seen it once, you will never forget it.
I'll just come right out and say it. They're a bit phallic.
They're quite a bit phallic. They have a siphon that can stretch about the length of a man's arm. And yes, it looks like things you're not supposed to talk about on the radio.
But they're fascinating things. They spend almost their whole lives down in the muck at the bottom of the sound.
They essentially cocoon themselves in the muck below the water, and they will stay there for their entire lives, which can be as long as 150 years. And divers actually go dig these creatures out, and they will pack them in mesh bags and haul them up to a boat and then immediately ship them overseas. So they are sold live to China, Hong Kong, and Japan, where they're served as a seafood delicacy.
And enough people wanted to get these things that there's an illegal fishery as well. They're going after this in all kinds of crazy and creative ways.
Absolutely. I mean, the bottom line is these clams are only found here, and they're really popular in a part of the world where both wealth and population are growing. So there's a lot of money to be made, and the rules governing harvest are very conservative. Therefore, the supply is not as big as the demand. There's a great demand for folks who want to go out of their way to take them.
Well, the way you write about the poachers trying to get the clams, the good guys trying to get the poachers, it read to me like a true crime novel or a hard-boiled detective story, something out of Raymond Chandler or Dashiell Hammett. Can you read us a little bit?
Mm-hmm. Thieves traded clams for Vicodin and swapped them for untaxed cigarettes. Dozens of poachers were on the water every week, some smuggling tens of thousands of clams. The cops suspected the value of the theft probably surpassed several hundred thousand dollars a year. Later, they would realize that wasn't even close.
The main characters here are people who are on both sides of the fence. You have the detectives and also the informants, the people who are in this world of the illegal trade.
Yeah, the story basically started in the mid-90s with a really sort of larger-than-life fisherman who started noticing that there was crime going on all around him and that he was feeling cheated. He decided that it was in his best interest to go and talk to the police. And suddenly you have this relationship that would last for many, many years between this gregarious informant and these wildlife cops.
And I guess as things will in the waters of the Puget Sound, things get pretty murky with that relationship.
Yes, they start sharing information with federal agents for the National Marine Fisheries Service, who police both the international and intrastate trade in wildlife. And so they spend a year gathering information, and they're all set to start taking cases to federal prosecutors when the informant calls one day and says, there is a gentleman who has called me today who said that he would like to blow up one of his rivals in his truck. And suddenly, this has now become something much more serious than they'd ever anticipated.
It's amazing. This is all about these big, ugly clams, and this guy is willing to blow up his competition. But then he decides he's just going to work him over, right?
Yeah, and here's where it really gets strange. So there's a series of phone calls between the informant and this broker, and he says he's going to hire a 300-pound hitman from L.A., a guy he claims was a retired sheriff who had helped train Robert De Niro in the movies. And the federal agents finally decide that their safest bet is to find a way to get the informant to ask the broker to hire him instead. And from there, it works almost according to plan. The federal agents eventually connect with the 300-pound hitman from L.A., and they're going to have him testify before a grand jury that he was approached by this guy. They get him to come up to Seattle, and he gets off the plane, and he is carrying a stuffed teddy bear because it turns out he is actually afraid of flying. And at this point, the federal agents aren't quite sure what to make of this.
The would-be hitman has his own teddy bear. What do you think the wildlife officers make of their work? I mean, in some ways, they seem like they're very proud. In fact, one of them passed up an opportunity to work in the FBI. He thought this was more important, more elite.
And I think that's true of a lot of them. I think the gentleman who had a chance to work at the FBI, his basic argument was, you know, the FBI has 12,000-13,000 agents, and his agency, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, had about 200. I don't think they feel that they get the respect they deserve because people think, oh, well, you're just chasing people who are stealing clams. How tough can it be? Their counterargument is, if you're a federal agent and you're trying to stop a drug dealer, every time you see heroin, somebody is committing a crime. Heroin is illegal. Well, gooey ducks are only illegal if they're taken from the wrong place, at the wrong time, by the wrong people, out of season. In some ways, their job is a little bit more difficult because each of those rules varies from species to species.
And this trade for wildlife, not just the gooey duck, of course, but wildlife smuggling, it's one of the big ones, right behind drugs and human trafficking.
Exactly. Drugs, human trafficking, and guns, and then three or four, you have wildlife trafficking. And I think most people have always thought of wildlife trafficking as stuff from Africa or Indonesia going into the West, into Europe and the U.S. But people all over the world can find an interesting product from nature just about anywhere. And that means that you have rattlesnakes from New York put into the panels of cars and driven across the border to Canada and then shipped around the world. You have sturgeon eggs from the Sacramento River shipped over to Eastern Europe. There's pretty much something in every state that is now taken illegally from the U.S. and shipped abroad.
It is so hard to police this. Did you come away with the impression that that's kind of a hopeless cause? My guess is they're barely making a dent in the smuggling.
Well, and that's their guess, too. Most of the officers I talk to say that they suspect that they are aware of maybe 10% of the wildlife crime. I cover in this book everything from black bear gallbladders to abalone poaching to butterfly thieves. In some cases, it's a really strange world, but it's not particularly ecologically sensitive. In other cases, abalone, for example, or moss in national forests, it's entirely possible for people to actually take all or close to all of a particularly rare species and sell it abroad. So, you know, the sort of the variety and scope of the trade is unnerving enough. I think it's very difficult to imagine them really putting a dent in things.
You know, some might look at the situation with the clam, the gooey duck, and say, well, it's not endangered or threatened. Why are we limiting the trade in the first place?
I think that's a fair question, and I think the answer makes sense, too, which is that's how we prevent such a thing from becoming rare and endangered. You know, here in the Pacific Northwest, we've had our experiences with overfishing. We now have several species of salmon that are endangered in Puget Sound because we did not actually do a good enough job early on trying to control fishing. We have the same issue with gooey ducks. So if we actually sort of set harvest rules early on, we can make sure that we're going to take care of these creatures safely over the long term. That, in a sense, actually helps create demand for the illegal market. But, you know, what's the alternative?
The book is called Shell Games. Craig Welch, thanks very much.
Thank you.